Broadcasting from occupied territories, War the Flea Media, it's the Reality Dysfunction Podcast, a space where a diverse group of brown folk from across the nation explore the political experiences and social future of our Chicano Latino community. Control the narrative. Resist the dysfunction.
Greetings, dysfunctionals. This is Dr. Ernesto back with another episode of the Reality Dysfunction. Today, we're talking with Mark Anthony Torres, a long time, a three-decade friend, comrade, combatant alongside me in many of the struggles of my youth. I recently interviewed Mark. He's decided to run for Congress in his district in Michigan, and I thought we would just sit down and have a little chat about his efforts around that and some of the other stuff that he has going on. I hope you enjoy this. I want to thank you for being on the podcast, and I'm very excited that we get a chance to sit down and talk about this. I noticed the other day on Facebook, which is where all of us old folks gather and do our social meeting, that you were running for Congress in your district back in Michigan. I was hoping that we could talk a little bit about that.
You know, yeah, absolutely. Let's get some excited. Ideas. I mean, I know that's why you invited. One of the reasons you invited me on. Yeah. It's okay. I can certainly start. Telling you some of my thoughts and tales and what occurred here. So, really quick mention about Facebook too. For better or for worse, it's a super effective, you know, tool. I mean, it is. It's the town square at the moment, and I do think it's irrespective of age. I know there's a lot of, and I'm actually in technology, and actually more specifically, social media marketing is one of my. Or his expertise, I do understand the numbers, but it's pretty, it's useful. And I'll tell a quick story about how useful it was just in this past couple of days. So yeah, I'm currently a candidate for Michigan's 9th Congressional District for the House of Representatives. So Congress, I hope to represent this community in Washington, D.C. for the upcoming 2024 election. So at the current state I'm at in Michigan, the requirement is that you, in order to run for House of Representatives or Congress, you need to get minimum 1,000 signatures from voters in your district. And actually, it's a very big district.
Just 1,000?
Yes, but that's that.
It's a lot, but it's not bad.
No, correct. And I just side note, I think for Senate, it's like 15,000. So it's that's crazy to me. After having gone through this right now, I'm just like, wow, 15,000 signatures just blows my mind. So very big district that I'm living in. So I live in Orion Township. It's a suburb of Detroit. We're the southern part of the district itself. So the district really is which is North Oakland County. So anybody's familiar with this area, you know, Metro Detroit is primarily made up of Wayne, which is where Detroit itself is, Oakland, and Macomb County. And you know, for all intents and purposes, the majority of the Michigan population lives in this three county area. So anyhow, so we're on the northern part of that, and the district itself is my community is the southern part, and we go all the way up to all the way up to the thumb part of Michigan, all the way over to the lake, so Lake St. Clair, and then parts of Lake Huron. So it's a very rural community, to be honest with you, but the heavy populations in these suburban pockets where I live. Kind of a fun fact about Orion Township, the city itself or the community itself. So this is actually where Jimmy Hoffa's from. This was his getaway. So I believe Jimmy Hoffa lived in the city of Detroit. He was a union leader. I think everybody's familiar with. There's movies and lots of lore about Jimmy Hoffa. So Lake Orion was his getaway because back in the day, this was actually considered like up north where Detroiters would go to just get away from it all. And now we're the burbs, you know, we are, you know, I could be in Detroit in about 30 plus minutes. You know, we go to Detroit for sporting events and concerts and dinners and stuff like that. So it's just a fun fact, but yeah. So anyhow, running for Congress for this community, to represent this community, heavily invested in this community, you know, not born and raised from two towns, actually just minutes from here. So I was actually born in Pontiac, Michigan. Pontiac's very famous for the automotive community. The cars itself were named after it. That's where I was born and grew up for some years. And then I moved to another community called Rochester, just south of here as well. So not in the district, but basically, long story short, this is home to me. I know these people. I know this area. I love it here. I want to see the best of it. And, you know, certainly a lot of the problems that are impacting the whole country are a big part of, you know, we don't escape, though. We're a microcosm of that. I'll give you a good example. So one of GM's General Motors' big plants is actually here in Orion Township. They're actually retooling, I guess is the right term, with a lot of federal money from the infrastructure bill that was passed recently, which, by the way, the congresswoman who represents this district voted against, but now it's certainly going to benefit her community. This is where GM is going to make a lot of their EVs. They're actually in the process of doing that. And so that's kind of an example of some of the conflicts that are in this community, you know, pro EV, anti EV, but even some of the challenges that have engendered that plant's been there for decades. It's kind of a very important plant to General Motors, and the surrounding roads around it are destroyed. You know, you run the risk of ruining your car if you go down those roads. Yeah. Like, things like that upset me because there's nobody talking about that, you know, and we, the people of this community, just kind of put up with it.
Yeah.
And so I think if we put up with it, our leadership does too. I mean, I you know, preaching in the choir on this, I think, to a lot of your audience, but, you know, one of the things that upsets me is that leadership isn't held accountable. And again, bringing home, I'm just bringing home to my district, because that's what matters, you know, in this conversation. And so a number of things are happening with the incumbent and the woman who I hope to oust is that, you know, I think she's very good at preying on, and I think a lot of politicians are very good about this, preying on the ignorance of people. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But one thing I've learned, you know, in these past couple of days, even, Todd, is that a lot of people don't even know who their congresswoman is. And so I'm come up and saying, I would like to run for Congress. And they say, well, who is the current? And so I have to explain to them, and which is even more intriguing to me, is that this is actually a heavy Republican community. I'm actually running as a Democrat, just to be clear. This is a heavy R community. It's actually been labeled the most Republican district in all of Michigan. So certainly an uphill battle. It makes sense. I mean, we encompass a large rural community. I'm not disparaging, but it is, you know, it's not, it's, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that they definitely lean in that direction. I've talked to thousands of citizens, voters of this community over the past couple of days, just for my process of capturing signatures. And, you know, give you an example, I'll say to them, running for Congress, or, you know, give my name and tell them what party I'm with. And they'll say, well, I'm actually voting. No, I won't even sign your ballot because I'm a Republican. And I have to explain to them, well, you're not voting for me. I'm just asking for you to help me get on the ballot. Because the incumbent's a Republican. And they'll say, who is the congressman? And I tell them, oh, her name is Lisa McClain. And they're like, oh, I like her. Like, but you didn't even know who she was. Literally, you just like her because she's the party that you represent. You don't know anything about her. You know, right. The good, the bad, the ugly. And I'm not trying to get into these conversations with people because I don't have time right now. It's all about getting signatures. You know what I mean? Like that's yeah. A conversation for another time when we're canvassing and we're door knocking and we're trying to convert people. But that just really upsets me because it not blaming the community. I'm blaming really the leadership because it they prey on that ignorance again. And that's been a motivating factor for me. You know, I'll be honest. I've been on the sidelines politically for some time, you know, focusing on some important things to me, my family. I have a young family and old family. I have adult children, but I actually have an 11-month-old. I have teenagers and I have tweenagers. I own a few businesses. So I've really kind of had to, you know, focus my areas in that direction. Politically, I do, you know, I've tried to be involved where I could. My brother is has run for several different offices, always there for him, canvassing, door knocking, donations, fundraising. But one of the things that, you know, throughout the past couple of years, I've tried to maintain a communication with my congresswoman because I understand the process. I'm actually a politics nerd. Like, I really am geeked out about the structure itself, you know, parties aside, like how things happen, the sausage making, as they say, you know, all the backdoor stuff and all the intrigue. And I'm aware of some of the more basic things, and as I put it, to be blunt, presidents are just there to sign legislation. I mean, that's how I do it. Congress is there to make legislation, and that's their job. And when they don't, which is really, I think we know this is verifiable fact. They're not making laws. Yeah. They're busy fighting laws or shooting things down because it benefits them. And I'll get to the incumbent or the woman I hope to challenge. So anyhow, she preys on this ignorance. And so I call her office regularly. I email her regularly. She actually has an office literally a quarter mile from my house. I point over here, like, you know, a ghost office. I'll say, because she's never there, never probably even been there. There's always some young, you know, staffer there, and they'll hear me out. They'll have me vent, and they'll be like, oh, this is great stuff. And I know they're not taking any of this down, or maybe they are, and they're going to crumble and throw in the trash. So one of the things that set me off recently was the State of the Union address recently by President Biden. And immediately following it, checking the X, and I see Lisa McClain. She's very active on X, you know, kind of a loudmouth. And she's like, you know, if Joe Biden doesn't like the current immigration status, he can just reinstitute Donald Trump's executive orders. End of subject. And I just blew my stack at that point. And I waited till the morning. You know, it was 8 a.m. I called her office at 8 a.m. I said, you know, I speak to the staffer, Lisa, that's total crap. Like, your job is to make laws. Like, if you're literally advocating for a president to do things through executive order, then what the hell are you there for?
Yeah.
Your job is to make the freaking laws for him to sign, whether it's Trump or Biden or whoever. Yeah. That's why you were sent there. Yeah. But she's preying on the ignorance of her constituencies who don't know that.
Yeah.
And that just blew me away. And I'm like, what is your function?
Yeah.
Like, make the laws. And so, trying to bring it home to my nerdiness about this. So I tell this to anybody, listen, one of my favorite movies is Abraham Lincoln, like the biopic about Lincoln.
Yep.
And with Daniel Day-Lewis. And because it's not really a biopic about Lincoln and he grew up and how his life was. The movie is about his attempt to pass the 13th Amendment.
Yeah.
And the reason why in my mind, that is a must watch for every single American citizen, because it reinforces that he even says, like, I can do whatever I want. This is the exact line is, I'm cloaked in immense power. But the moment
Favorite line in that movie.
Even his team is like, but just make an executive order, because we'll never convince the southern states. We'll never get Missouri. We'll never happen. He's like, get it done. Figure it out. Because he's like, when I'm gone, it'll be gone.
Yep.
And so, like, that to me reinforces what most Americans don't know, that the you know, president, great, you know, Trump can come back or whoever. Maybe Biden gets reelected. That's not really the point here. They can do things through executive order, but the moment they leave, those executive orders dissolve and they're gone, and that's not lasting.
That's right.
And what does last is laws, more specifically constitutional amendments. Those are almost forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, Lisa, if we want to fix the issue with drugs coming over the border or immigration and all the challenges that presents, by all means, I'm there for that. Let's figure this out. Let's have conversations. But by all means, it should not be done through executive order, because all that happened is it'll just roll over and nothing will get done. And she knows that too. I mean, I know she's not dumb. She knows that, but she's preying on the ignorance of her constituency. That just blew my mind. That was the deciding factor for me. That's when I said, I can't stand this anymore. I got to do something, because I may not be the smartest guy in the room. I may not be the most up to speed on policy, but I know for damn sure I can do better than her. End of subject. So
I agree with you. I think you probably could. I think you're a pretty smart guy. Just for the listeners, actually, Mark and I met each other 30 years ago. It was 30 years ago this year, in the fall of this year.
Yeah, 1994.
Yep, 1994. Yeah. He was a fresh-faced 18-year-old freshman at Michigan State University who was about to become a powerhouse in the politics of that campus. I'm not sure he knew it at the time.
I don't think any of us knew it. I almost feel like that right now. Like, didn't know what the future was going to hold. Uh-oh.
Yeah. But it was quite a ride. Mark's also been featured in a documentary that I produced, directed and produced, called War of the Flea, Fight for Chicano Studies, which chronicles, I guess, really, Mark, the whole time that you were at Michigan State,
the first portion was a few months before I got there, but it was almost like that just kind of laid the groundwork for fertile ground for activism, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how that experience sort of shaped, you know, your desire to be involved in public life. And, you know, I mean, like you were saying, you got a family, you got things going on, you got a little girl, you got a lot happening, but you've always been willing to, you know, to really step out there and make that extra effort. And I mean, I'm sure it partially has to do with your parents, who were both strong union people, and who worked very hard, right, to make sure that you and your brothers had the kind of chances that you had.
Yeah, you're spot on, Todd. I think, The itch to get involved did it did originate from my parents, and it was learned by doing. So it wasn't even like my parents ever told my brothers and I, you need to get involved or you need to make a difference. It was we were tagged along to so many events. I was just on the like talking to my brother yesterday about this. Is that, we pretty much grew up in union halls. Getting picked up from school. We went to private school. We'd be in our uniforms and we'd bring our books and our coloring books. And we'd just be there till late, what felt like late at night. Maybe I was like 8 o'clock, but to me, it felt like I was there till 2 a.m. We're just in these, UAW halls specifically, by automotive. So two-prong, my father was a retired General Motors line, worked on the line. So UAW entire time. And my mother, who's passed on, she was an employee for the state of Michigan. And they're also represented by the United Auto Workers, UAW Local 6000. So just a very much learning the need to get involved, sort of the obligation. And then even learning the positive changes that came from that. You know what I'm trying to explain? Like there were long-term gains, but short-term gains. Like the fact that, my father who came from Mexico with literally nothing. And when people talk about, some dude came with, came to United States from Mexico, I think around the age of 23, didn't speak any English whatsoever. I mean, he came from poverty in Mexico, so he didn't have access to like English classes or anything like that. Literally nothing. I mean, I just can't frame it any other way. And the fact, and surely no education, because he was from the poverty class of Mexico, he didn't even go to school. Like not even once. Like not even like he dropped out in kindergarten or like he just never went to school. Couple that with, the odds were certainly stacked against him. And so where I'm going with this is that. But then he got in with the United. He got in General Motors. He worked for United Auto Workers, and he got to build a decent life.
Yeah,
it wouldn't really shouldn't that you know any other circumstance or any other time and place would not have been possible. But in Michigan specifically in the Midwest, because of the strength of the union, that was possible.
Yeah,
that, we could have actually food on the table. And granted, we had a tough life. Don't get me wrong, but I mean for somebody who didn't have who didn't really learn English until his 30s, I would say, and didn't have great opportunities in education. He got to have, a good thing. Even to this day, he's still with us and he gets a pension from GM. He's still being taken care of or by the union.
Right.
And so and moreover, he gets my mother's pension, who, again, taken care of by the union so that he's not left to die in his old age with no money. So that's what I'm saying. You see like effective change. And so you kind of realize, okay, this actually does work. Even the little things like my brother and I, we actually got scholarships through the union. And so just realizing that activism can result in change, and again, it was just part of what we did, who we were and what we did, even as I remember meeting Cesar Chavez, at the age of 12 years old, he spoke here at Hoke University, which isn't far from here. And, growing up in picket lines. And so, I guess at that point, it really was, as you mentioned, things were really spawning at Michigan State in terms of activism. The ground was fertile, and then it really was a serendipitous a situation that arose. And I'll bring it to today, to modern, to like where we stand literally as at this moment. I'm getting deja vu at this past weekend, and I was out getting signatures and talking to people. Deja vu from the same thing that I went through at MSU, at Michigan State, when we were doing these activisms. What I get by that is for every one person who's all like, oh, I love your cause. You're spot on. You're speaking to me. What we would see at MSU, because I think at MSU, we saw mostly detractors and not people in favor of what we're doing.
Yeah.
So I see that here too. So like, people like for every, one person I asked to get their signature, I'm all in. The other four were like, hell no, or maybe, or I don't agree with your causes, but you're a nice guy, so I'm sure. And so that groundwork or that those experiences at Michigan State, which, basically getting our teeth kicked in for many years, really is really coming back to me. And I'm definitely got tougher skin, because I also know that is the path to success too. Like, it's seldom straight. It's like this, and I'm not deterred by the detractors that I'm meeting and getting encountered with.
That totally makes sense. That was real formative also for me too, in terms of things that I went on to do later. I mean, I would really encourage anyone who's listening to take a look at the documentary. There's a number of people that are in it, but you certainly get a more of a chance to hear Mark's position about some of these different political stances, right? That I think it's really important for people in the Chicano Latino community to take. I know lots of times, you know, people really are down about voting and they're upset, yes, you know, about the Democrats and about the Republicans, or I should say about the Trumpers. I'm not even so sure that you can call Republicans and Trumpers the same thing anymore.
No, it's now Trump's party now. That's the truth. You know, that's what it boils down to.
And so I'm just kind of wondering, Mark, you know, for yourself, you know, how do you see this? I mean, you don't live in an area where there's a lot of Chicanos or Latinos. I mean, it's just not
right. Really. Correct.
Yeah. So how do you see your sort of stepping out as kind of a representation? I mean, not even just you, like your brother, JP has been real involved in like running for county commissioners and school board. Also,
yeah, he's on the school board in Waterford, Michigan, which again, which is a predominantly, white community. Yeah, you're right, Todd. That is, it's a very interesting situation. So I'll kind of bring it back home. So I grew up in, you know, for most of my formative years, high school, middle school, I grew up in Rochester, Michigan, you know, 90, even to this day, it's like 90% white. And then I went to Michigan State University.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, 90% white, you know, and maybe even a little less now, you know, but in our time it was.
Yeah.
So, again, not disparaging it, just facts.
Yeah.
And so, you know, especially for me going from Rochester to Michigan State, you know, the leap wasn't even that massive because most of my graduating class went to Michigan State. So it was like, you know, it was, you know, very seeing a lot of the same faces. So, one thing that I just, you know, to be honest, is that one thing I learned in life was that we have a lot in common. We actually have more in common than we don't. You know, when I talk about, being Mexican American in this area, or representing, you know, the just by default representing the Latino community.
Sure.
Whenever there was an issue, people would ask me or look to me, and I have no problem saying, yeah, I have an opinion on this topic. Let's discuss. And so one of the things that I've just constantly learned, though, is by and large, you know, we have a lot more in common than we do, but we don't. So what I've always had success in doing, even our time of activism at MSU, is just finding commonality in that, or finding success in that commonality. Like, yes, we can all agree that, you know, again, bringing home the Michigan's 9th district, that our infrastructure is bad. We can all agree that our water needs to be protected. We can all agree that our environment needs to be protected. We all are, and actually, even a kind of a more profound, you know, situation. So Michigan's 9th district actually includes Oxford, Michigan. That's the most recent school shooting. So that's a very, very, you know, emotional topic here. I mean, for those who don't know, in November of 2021, 14-year-old freshman took a 9mm to school and shot several students. Oh, four were killed. Many, many others were injured. A massive tragedy, very preventable. The signs were there. When that day happened, I was this spot where I'm at. This is my home office. I could hear the Lapeer Road is a quarter mile that way. Lapeer Road goes. There's only one way to Oxford. It's Lapeer Road, Oxford High School specifically. I could hear the sirens. I'm like, what's going on? I run upstairs. My wife is telling me, she's like, I can see what the Facebook group that everybody's talking about, what's happening is a shooting. So like, it's a very personal topic here. You know why? And so, and the days ensuing after that, there were a number of threats at local schools, my kid's school. My kid, it was about 3 or 4 days he didn't go to school. We kept him back because there was credible threats. Like, these are, bring it home, is that, like, things like that are common. Like, whether you're voting for Trump or Biden or whoever, we can all agree, I don't want my kid to get shot at school.
Right.
That's a basic, like common denominator.
It's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer.
It's like, a no-brainer.
We all love our children. So, you know, how do we get there? How do we solve these problems? That's what I want. That's where I'm coming from. And like, kind of bring it, you know, the incumbent, she's not even having that conversation. She's actually don't think she's ever even been to Oxford. Doesn't talk about this issue. And so that's what I'm coming to the table with, is that, yes, you know, I may, to be blunt, I may have a different name. I may look different, But I think we, you know, I'm just like you. I'm a family man. I'm a business owner. You know, I have a lot. I have a lot of vested interest in this community, and nothing would make me happier than to see it thrive, and to see an environment where our children have safety. You know, clean air, clean water, a future. And so that's what I'm coming. Like at the end of the day, like my incumbents, I think her children are grown. God bless her. I have grown children too, so I get that. But do you know the plight of the current child right now? And yeah. I do. Like it's a different world than it was when your kids grown up. And I know this because I have a 29-year-old son, and the world that his 11-month-old sister is growing up in is vastly different.
Yeah.
And that's the world we need to address. And I don't feel like that's being addressed at the Washington level for a number of reasons. Yeah. Because I think there's so much value in chaos right now. You know, I'll pick on the Republicans. You know, it just having things in disarray is good for business, good for fundraising. We know this for a fact that Donald Trump shot down the most recent effort at the first ever immigration legislation in decades.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just good for business. And so that's not cool with me, man. Like I too don't like the problems that we're seeing. Like, you know, yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that maybe fentanyl is coming across the border from Mexico. And that is a problem. So how do we fix it? Well, doing nothing is not fixing it. I mean, something would have fixed it, or the bill that was shot down would have at least possibly addressed it. Yeah. It didn't. It was a step in the right direction. I mean, I've been to several funerals of individuals who have overdosed. It is a massive, massive issue. And we're all copacetic with just, or more specifically, the Republican Party's copacetic with just letting it be for another year plus. Yeah. And to be blunt, even if Trump won, he wouldn't get a legislation. He wouldn't get anything passed because he would need the support of the Democratic Party as well. And even if they're not in a majority, they could still, you know, it's just so infuriating.
Yeah.
And so that's the commonality I'm bringing to the table with the people around here. Like I play golf with these people. I talk with them at the school bus. I see them at the grocery store. So I definitely have, you know, have a lot of experience to just being able to find the common ground and then, you know, really kind of, helping them understand that, you know, yes, I have a different perspective and experience, but we have more in common than we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mark, I mean, in addition to being a longtime activist, right, and growing up with, you know, in a union household, you're a Michigan homie. I mean, you've been there your whole life, and, you know, really contributed. Right. In a lot of ways, in ways that a lot of people haven't, but you've also written a book and, which is, you know, something that not everybody does.
Yeah. It was a
there's
blast,
a lot dude. Of books, but there's not a lot of people. I mean, it's really surprising that there's just not that many people, you know, who actually write one, but you have written one and it's published. I was wondering if you could, I read the draft. And,
yes. Yeah. You were one of the first people I brought in on the project. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. Thanks for bringing it up, Todd. So this is just a fun project. So, you know, take a step back here. So my bachelor's degree is actually in journalism. So I liked to write. I mean, I know fiction, and it's a fiction book, by the way. Fiction isn't necessarily journalism, unless we hope it shouldn't be. But what journalism is that, you know, journalism is the art of writing, right. The art of storytelling.
Storytelling.
Like a good, like a, whether you're covering a school board meeting or a fire, if you're writing blasé shit or, you know, apologize, you know, then nobody's going to read it. But if you can give it some color and some detail,
right,
it'll get read, hopefully, and people will learn. You know, I just always kind of felt that way. And I was, you know, as a journalism student, I was constantly being complimented on my writing by my teachers. They were really like, you know, you really write well. You give great detail. You give a great, you know, great color. I was actually one of the most famous columnists at Michigan State for the State News. So the State News is our campus paper. It's really one of the most famous popular student college papers in the country. So it was a very much a distinct honor to be their featured columnist. And so I really love writing. Let's put it that way.
Wrote a lot of those.
So I got the idea to, you know, just noodling with my wife one night, you know, over drinks about this crazy, like, what if scenario. So the story is really about a ancient demonic cult that's living in plain sight, and they're doing terrible things like killing and raping and kidnapping. And they've been doing it for centuries, actually, but nobody's ever noticed. And to kind of bring it home to Michigan. So they actually live in a rural community in Michigan. And so it's kind of got that stippling, like that sort of Stephen King angle to it, but also very much a black story in terms of like darkness and evilness. And, you know, and again, I think I mentioned earlier a few moments ago, I'm a big history buff. So I really weave in history. So yeah. The book actually, so the book takes place in modern day Michigan. So I think, you know, to be blunt, like 2022 or 2023 is the year I pick. Or actually 2019. I take that back. I intentionally chose pre-COVID because I didn't want to write masks into the story. I started the book in 2018. So I did. And by the time I finally got it published, I'm like, I'm not going back and adding masks at a restaurant. So,
well, that's just going to make it more complicated.
Man. Yeah. So the story takes place in 2019. And it's a woman, specifically the protagonist, who really just kind of one day notices some peculiarities about this community. She's like, something's not right. Something's weird. She thinks it's funny. It's a joke. She starts investigating. And she's like, oh, my God, I've stumbled across something sinister and evil. And it's this demonic cult. And so that's the book. Really, it's just her, a race against time to expose them. But then they realize she's gone to them. And now they're both competing to get to this end first for her to get them exposed. And then for them to possibly, you know, take care of her or deal with their air quotes. So again, history, I mean, the parts of the book actually take place in chapter 3 specifically takes place in a World War I German trench. And you ask yourself why?
Yeah.
You have to read the book. But I really do explain, you know, it all comes together. You know, another part of my book takes place in the year 400 in ancient Germany in a battle between the German tribes and the Roman Empire. Another chapter of my book takes place with an investigative journalist who's exposing human trafficking in Guatemala and Mexico.
Right.
You ask yourself, what does that have to do with any of this? You'll read the book and it'll all come together and it'll just really fascinate you. So the book is called Omer, OEMOR. And if you read the book, I think in chapter 3, I explain where the name comes from. In that German trench, to be specific.
Right.
And so it can be found on Amazon. Just type in OEMOR on Amazon. It's that simple. OEMOR. Or you can go to my website, OEMOR.shop, dot as in buy, OEMOR.shop. So yeah, again, just total passion project. It just had fun. You know, it took me a few years to get it together. Hobby writing, you know, and it was really coming together, and I was circulating the draft to a few people. I think my wife, bottom line, because my wife is the most blunt person ever. Like she'll tell me like if the pants I'm wearing are stupid looking or if the shirt I'm wearing looks great, you know, unasked, even too. Like even without unprovoked come downstairs. She's like, you're wearing those stupid pants. Oh my God, go change. Or she'll counter it and say, oh my God, that shirt is wonderful. It makes your arms look awesome. You know? So, you know, I had written like four chapters. And I gave her the draft and I was really nervous, you know, and I saw her on the couch, and the fact that she didn't move for like 5 hours blew my mind. She's like, oh my God, I need to know more. And she prides herself on like not being she does not read novels. She's like, I don't read. I just, you know, she actually went to grad school, and she's like, I've read enough books for a life. I'll never read another book again. She's like, I'm done with books. But she's like, the fact she's the one who said, go with this, whatever time you need. I'll take the kids. You write. And so that really kind of encouraged me. And again, so I think in life, we always need that blunt person who checks you one way or another. For many of us, luckily enough, that can be your spouse. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I have I have experienced the joys of that bluntness.
Yes.
And reap the benefits of it.
It's more good than bad. Let's put it that way.
Shout out to Jessica Cota.
That's right. Shout out to Jess.
So, you know, as we're kind of coming in towards the end, I was wondering if maybe you could tell us a little bit about the Mashika clothing line that launched.
Yes, correct. So, you know, as mentioned, I'm a business owner. This is a few clothing lines on Amazon, but this is one that I'm kind of feeling the most at the moment. It's just called Mashika.com, MESHICA.com. And I got one of my hoodies. I know this is audio format, but for those on video, so kind of show that off there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So really, you know, this is the story is about just being proud in our name. And I'll tell you the story really quick. So for those who don't know, prior to the European invasion of Mexico, the people of that land called themselves Mexica, the Mexica. I know Aztec gets thrown out there a lot, but that was more of a post-colonial name, but the Mexica is the name. And it's the root for many of our, you know, identities to this day. The word Mexico comes from Mexica. Mexicano comes from Mexica. I think even, you know, many could say that even Chicano comes from Mexica. Yeah. It's all about the linguistics. You know, that she sound didn't exist in the Spanish language. So when they came over, they converted to a H sound. That's where Mexico comes from. But really, to me, it's just reclaiming our name. You know, I just want to be proud of who we are. I am proud of who we are. And I'll never forget, you know, our people are amazing. But the accomplishments, that ferociousness, that ingenuity, that exists today in all of us, man. You, myself, our children. Like, you know, like I really want to, if I could tell people from mountaintop, like the amazing accomplishments that we achieved as a civilization, you know, the people of Central Mexico, you know, in farming, in science, in medicine, we were a world power. We were a force to be reckoned with. And then we were the victims of genocide. You know, if we would have been able to just be who we were, we would be up there with China and India and all these United States, we would be a world power.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we got interrupted. So it doesn't mean and to be honest, we can get there still, but you know, time is flat, you know, but at the time, just again, it's just, you know, clothing is important to me. And I'll tell you why. I mean, because I noticed that people love to express themselves with clothing. You know, kind of got the idea years ago. I think it was in Disney World. And I remember like just sitting and waiting for my kids to get off a ride. And I saw like every other person get off was wearing a Red Wings hat or Pittsburgh Steelers hat, Yankees. That was like the three most popular things I saw: Detroit Red Wings, Pittsburgh Steelers, and New York Yankees. And you think to yourself, God, the whole world must be a New York Yankees fan, you know? But they're not. But it's just like they're expressive. They love to just express themselves and say, "I am proud of this team." And so it's just a human nature. Yeah. So you know, why not express ourselves and say, "I'm proud of this of my people, the Mexica." I didn't, you know, and a lot of people don't even know what the name Mexica was. I got to do some explaining. Oftentimes people ask, and I have no problem explaining it. That's really what I want to do. It's just a way to kind of, you know, teach and be proud at the same time. So,
yeah.
Again, at Mexica.com, MESHICA.com. That'll take you right to the Amazon store. Okay. Got hoodies, t-shirts, a few options for you.
So. All right. Mark, it's always wonderful, man. It really
is. Yeah, it was a blast, dude.
Yeah. It's been 30 years, man. I still love talking to you. So this is Mark Torres, a Renaissance man. He's an author. He is a clothes designer. He is running for Congress in the 9th
House of Representatives, Michigan's 9th Congressional District.
Michigan's 9th Congressional District. And I've had a great time talking to you, Mark. We'll have to see how things go after you get those 1,000 signatures.
Absolutely. Appreciate your support. Appreciate your help. I love the podcast. I've been listening for years as well. So this is a very great space, great forum.
This is The Reality Dysfunction.